if the lab or imaging is not going to change how I treat my patient, then I don't do it. Helping to reduce the danger signal to the brain, debunking the whole scam system out there with these umbilical cord stem cells.
Does insurance cover these things?
Yeah, we can treat that other stuff, but until you address the fire, which is the damn food you're putting in your mouth, the steroid injections actually cause more degeneration. One, I don't like putting a percent on it because this is just an opinion, and I know opinions are biased, but I would argue that a large percentage of patients with chronic pain have a neurogenic pain component that has never been addressed.
Podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here. I know I typically don't hop on before these longer episodes, but I wanted to both give you a heads up and perhaps apologize for the audio in the upcoming episode. For whatever reason, Drew's track was compressed kind of weird, and I did my best with the post-production editing. I think it came out fine. I ran it by a few people and they said, yeah, it's good to go, but it's definitely not of the same caliber as past episodes that I've done. That in mind, I wanted to hop on, like I said, apologize, give you a little bit of a heads up, and let you know that, in my humble opinion, it's a little bit better if you're listening to it on a general speaker as opposed to in headphones. So again, I apologize. I reached out and people were like, oh, I don't even mention it, but I disagree. I want to let you guys know. And if you're like, you know what, Shante, this was terrible, I can't listen to it, I totally understand. Please write to me, let me know. But I went back and forth and the episode is just so good. I didn't want to have to try and re-record it. But if you guys are like, no, we don't like it, I will get Drew back on and we'll talk about some more stuff. But like I said, I did the best that I could with the post-production. Listen to it on the general speaker as opposed to in the headphones, and I think everything will be A-okay. All right, let's head to that episode. Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me a naturopathic medical doctor. I'm going to let him explain what that exactly is. And you may know him, if you're on social media, by his handle, Regenerative Performance. Dr. Drew Timmermans, he's someone I've been following for quite some time now, and I think that today's convo is going to really kind of bridge the gap, maybe dispel some myths about things that I know, maybe some preconceived notions that I had going into things, especially as a new physical therapist. And we've been trying to get on this for a while. He's actually getting married like tomorrow, so this man is making some big exceptions. So thank you, Drew. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. Drew Timmermans.
Maestro, thank you for having me. It is definitely long overdue.
It is, man. I'm like, I love the social media rendezvous and the social media encounters, and I've met nothing but the best people, and you are no exception to that rule. So I'm pumped to have you on.
It was just reminiscing when we were talking a few weeks ago about how when I first came across you, you were still using the typewriter background for your daily Maestro.
Yeah.
So it's definitely been a long time that we've needed to do this.
Dude, you guys listening, if he's referencing the Daily Maestroisms, those little, you know, graphics I make on social media, if you guys follow me there, you've seen them. And in the very beginning, I had this, you know, underlay that I would use. And then I realized it wasn't enough space for all the words I like to use. And I had to switch it. But you brought that up and I was like, dang, my man's an OG. I love it.
Did you have anything before the typewriter? Was the typewriter the, because I think when I came on, you were at like DM, maybe like 79. And that might actually be the exact one. But yeah, that was the first one.
That was it. That was the original iteration. I was like looking through Word Swag and I was like, I like this.
Nice.
And then I was like, this doesn't fit. It's too much.
Man, going back. You guys listening, we're on Maestroism, Daily-ish Maestroism, number 1013 or so. So it's
Which
been
is
a
gangster.
Minute.
It's good.
He's from 79. Like, it's been a minute. It's been awesome to watch you grow. Why don't you tell the people about you? Anything, everything, like... You're a really interesting guy, Drew. Share, please.
All right. So I originally hail from the Great White North. So I grew up in Canada.
Jon Snow.
My accent will probably come out at some point, and then everyone will be like, oh, yeah, he's Canadian. I grew up in Ontario, about 2 hours west of Toronto. Small little town, about 15,000 people or so. Probably no one has ever heard of unless you're from the area. Early on in high school, I got exposed to, you know, the route of medicine and decided that that was interesting and it was something that I wanted to pursue. You know, like all people who get into some form of care of other humans, you know, you usually have a backstory, a family member, something like that, someone that shaped you. While I definitely had that, it wasn't the biggest driver for me. It was more so just I just always wanted to learn. And that always drove my passion for understanding and human anatomy, specifically human anatomy, within all the fields of medicine, definitely piqued my interest the most. And so, I set my sights on medicine. I enrolled in, undergraduate studies, at the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario. And my major was, I had a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology, which, so basically, for those who don't know, is the study of human movement. And so did a lot with, you know, force plates and all that fun jazz and kinematics and whatnot. And I really liked it. And I think it has helped frame a lot of the stuff that I do now in the regenerative injection side of things, which I know we'll probably talk deep on. But at that point, I only knew about allopathic medicine. So for those of you who don't know, the term allopathic, is the term used for, medical doctors. So that's your typical MD. Then there's, osteopathic medicine, here in the States and in Canada don't really have that, but that's your DO. And then you have the naturopathic doctors, in some states were called naturopathic medical doctors. So that's your ND or your NMD. So at that point, I didn't know any different. And so I actually originally wanted to be a cardiac surgeon. I went and observed an open heart surgery which was mind blowing. I have no idea how I got lucky because I bet you there were probably even some residents that weren't as lucky as I was. But I actually got to stand at the head of the patient where the anesthesiologist is. And literally, like, I was on a stool looking down, like almost like in the TV shows when they show like the overhead view of like the surgery, like that's where I was. And it was mind blowing, fascinating, but it didn't do it for me. And so I was like, whoa, that's kind of weird, you know? And so I'm like, hey, maybe cardiac surgery isn't my jam, isn't what I want to do. And so I started talking with a few mentors and other people at the time and kind of realized that I had always had this passion for human movement and manual medicine and that kind of stuff. And so I thought, okay, well, I was a varsity track and field athlete in college. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll do sports medicine. And around that time, I actually got introduced to Mobility Wad and Kelly Starrett. Yeah. Like, it was like episode 4. I randomly came across him on YouTube. So really started following him and Brian McKenzie with Power Speed Endurance and that crew. And so I got into the manual side of the sports medicine realm. So fast forward, I applied to allopathic med school, had an interview at my alma mater, but didn't get accepted. And so I ended up working as a personal trainer in the year in between when I was going to reapply to med school. And I absolutely love that. Again, it just really fit in with what resonated with me in terms of my philosophies on medicine. And one of my clients noticed that I got really excited when patients would come to me and tell me, oh, my doctor took me off two out of my three blood pressure medications and I'm not on a statin anymore. And just because of the things that we were doing nutritionally and in the gym, and I was pumped for them. It was mind blowing that, you know, that we could have that type of effect, especially when at that time I was like, 20? No, I would have been 22 or 23 at that point. So it was still like pretty young and naive in terms of medicine.
Just surrounded by the allopathic model. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Better without drugs.
I know. And so one of my clients was like, hey, you should really check out naturopathic medicine. That, you know, it seems to really fit in with your philosophy. And so I go home that night, I look it up online, and it so there's six main tenets of naturopathic medicine. There's first do no harm, the healing power of nature, treat the whole person, a few other ones, but those are the main ones that I really focus on. And I read those and I was like, holy shit, like this is exactly like what resonates with me and my philosophy on medicine. I looked up the different schools in across the US and Canada. There's only like seven schools. So I'm like, cool. And I just started checking out the schools, had an interview out here in Arizona at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, fell in love with the people, fell in love with the weather. And I was like, mom, sorry, I'm leaving. I packed my bags and I was gone a few months later.
I'm out.
So that's kind of my origin story.
Dude. I love that it was a patient.
A single client, yeah.
It was a client, I guess, not a patient. That's pretty amazing that they were like, hey, which for you guys out there listening, there, you know, I'm always about like teasing lessons from everything. If you want to know what you're good at, listen to what people say. They'll tell you what you're good at and what, you know. And that's exactly what happened with Drew. It was like, you know, you have this guy coming in. He's like, hey, you like this? Look at the way your face lights up. Ask the people and they'll tell you what you're good at. It's not about you being like, I can do this. I'm good at this. That's part of it. But the people will tell you. And that is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I actually love that you called it allopathic medical school. Like, I wish that perhaps more people or that we would just start to do that in general. And maybe then things would actually change because, you know, it's my humble opinion that that model is very broken. And it's actually quite interesting to me that people still really sink their teeth into it in terms of thinking it's, you know, a feasible solution to things or that it's not feasible, a complete solution to things.
I do want to take a step back and just, I think, clarify the allopathic term. So if you talk to a mainstream doctor, an MD, they're not going to call themselves allopathic doctors. No. Allopathic doctors is actually a term that is used by alternative care doctors, and it's usually a pejorative term, and so which means that it is kind of a expressing like discontent or disapproval with that. And so I want to just make sure everybody knows on here that I am a supporter of mainstream medicine in the right time, in the right place. You're in a car accident. You do not want anybody else other than an ER trained surgeon saving your damn life. Like that, I actually just got goosebumps even thinking about anybody else like thinking anything differently. You have sepsis. You don't go to a holistic doctor. You go to the hospital and you go and you get the care that they are trained for. Like, That's where people get into trouble with naturopathic medicine is they think that, oh, natural's better. So therefore my child or I have this serious illness and I'm just going to say, screw Western medicine. Exactly. And it's like, no, everything has a time and a place, and you just have to learn where that is.
Absolutely. I think, you know, with the world that I deal with and what I see, that's why I lean towards the opposite direction, because you may tell people this, like, even when you're treating pain, like someone comes in, they just fell down, they just broke their leg. Yeah, like, understand where that falls in the spectrum of things. The problem is that we've been trying to treat chronic pain, or patients with chronic pain, with a very biomedical model. And it's like that is not appropriate.
Right.
We're not going to get to the appropriate outcome there for these patients with chronic pain. But understanding, like Drew just said, what is a person in front of you? And notice I said person in front of you, which means it's always going to be changing. What are they presenting with? And then going with that. I've said it all the time. You know, I'm not anti-surgery. I'm just very pro not surgery.
Yeah, I've told there are times when I use it all the time now.
Right? It's like there are times, there's a time and a place. And like when you need it, you're going to be really fucking happy that we have this, the capacity and the capabilities to be able to do it. But otherwise, you know, let's try and exhaust all of our other options. And speaking of that, Drew, can you explain a bit? Because I don't know if people out there follow you. Again, like if you don't follow him, he's at Regenerative Performance on Instagram. But if they don't follow you, can you explain some of this like kind of like what you do?
Yeah, you got it. So, I'll preface this by saying that it's sometimes difficult for me to even vocalize what exactly I do because it's all over the, it can look all over the place, but at the same time, it has just the unifying goal of helping the person in front of me. So as a physician, I treat a wide variety of people, who have different illnesses or chronic pain conditions. The things that I love to treat and the things that I am particularly gifted at treating is chronic pain, as well as any hormonal irregularities, dysfunction. So things like low testosterone or PCOS or menopause or andropause, hypothyroidism, that kind of stuff. But the approach that I take is different than the allopathic model of, okay, I'm a pain medicine or pain management specialist, and I'm an endocrinologist, which I sometimes use those terms for if I'm gauging the situation and people don't really, I'm not feeling that they're, you know, up for the naturopathic stuff. But in figuring out, okay, why is this patient in chronic pain? It is a whole body approach. So in that, I step back and look at how everything in that person is factoring into their chronic pain. And so if we need to, we look at nervous system health. You know, how is that affecting both their pain and their perception of pain? We look at gastrointestinal health. We will look at their, you know, what they're eating nutrition-wise. We will get into their marriage and their financial stresses, because all of that factors into the single thing they're walking in with, which is my back hurts. And it's easy to just say, oh, your back hurts. Okay, well, don't do the things that hurt it. And here's some supplements. And I mean, even on the naturopathic side of things, it's super easy to say, okay, we'll just take some high dose curcumin and here's some Boswellia and here's some Tramiel and let's get you scheduled for some injections. Mm-hmm. Like that's easy. And it's in some situations, it's at least better than the cortisone model. And the surgery model, but there's still such a deeper layer that I love getting into, which is, well, why, like you're eating all this terrible food that is causing inflammation in your gut that is then causing the systemic inflammation. Now you have central adiposity, that adipose tissue is creating inflammatory cytokines that are now going to your knee joints and your back, and they're causing you pain. Yeah, we can treat that other stuff, but until you address the fire, which is the damn food you're putting in your mouth, and the obesity that you have, we're just throwing water on a fire that's just going to keep blazing.
How long are your sessions that you're able to delve into? I mean, just even thinking about delving into the true psych, you know, not even say psycho, sort of the true social component of it. How's your marriage? How's your life going? How long is the session?
Yeah, so my new patient appointments are usually anywhere between 2 to 2.5 hours.
There we go.
Yeah. So, and that's really where we get into, and sometimes we don't even get into the psychosocial stuff until visit 2 or visit 8 or visit 40, just because some patients aren't, you can't just bombard them and say, tell me about your terrible marriage, because I can read it all over your face, but you know, and some patients just aren't going to be ready for that. Whereas other patients, you can tell like right off the bat, you know, they drop cues, and as long as, and for anyone out there, you know, you got to find a physician who has a good emotional quotient. Like they need to have a good EQ in order to help with a lot of this stuff. But it's really reading that situation and understanding where the patient's at, meeting them where they're at. So that way you can help them, guide them on this journey to you know, getting to the root cause of pain or whatever they're dealing with.
Totally. Now, this model sounds brilliant to me, amazing to me, but I'm also within this. And I know your schedule is bumping now, but was it always like that? And what do you do, or what did you do, whatever you do about buy-in? Because this is a very different model for some people.
Yeah. So what I have found, and it's difficult as well, because I'm also very biased, because I rarely ever have anybody on my social media or online or anything like kind of come from the other side of the fence, come from the pure allopathic model, call me a quack or anything like that. And it's, so it's a little biased in the sense that I don't see a lot of it directly, just because it's almost partitioned out. Now I was actually speaking with a guy that I ran track with back in college. He went down the allopathic route. I believe he's an internist now. But him and I were briefly talking about a year and a half ago. And he was kind of, you know, telling me he's fed up with the model, the system that they're in. And, you know, he wants to venture out and open up a private practice in conjunction with a naturopathic doctor. This is up in Ontario.
In Canada.
Yeah, in Canada land. He, you know, was just saying that the amount of bashing that is within their community against us is just astronomical compared to what I see. So to scale back on the question, I think the biggest thing that I've found work is just educating people and hoping that they're open to accepting it. Because at the end of the day, if someone is very hard set on, nope, I need surgery and it doesn't matter what I eat, I don't feel any different if I eat one day where I don't have gluten. And so gluten must not be affecting me. And so I just, you know, the doctor said I need this surgery and that's what I need. And that's a very hard person to get through to. So I don't really have a great answer to this question because it's,
No, I think that's a perfect answer, actually. I think you've hit a lot of good points there. Honestly, like I've done a lot more in the business. I've been trying to do a lot more on the business side for people and coaching side. And that's a great message. Everything that you just said there is a great message. One, treat who you want to treat. All my providers out there, especially my PTs, like you don't have to treat that demographic that doesn't want to see you. I get it. If you're working for someone, you're working in a clinic, and we'll talk about Drew's model. But, you know, if you're working for someone else, you're working in a clinic, then yeah, you're a bit stuck and maybe tied to that. But this is part of the reasons why I bring on people like Danny Matei to teach you how to open up your own thing and start your own thing so that you can see who you want, market to who you want, and realize that there are people out there that need your help. There's always going to be haters, typically within your own profession. We see it so much. That doesn't matter. That's not who's paying your bills, and that's not who you're trying to help. Drew has a perfect example here. He went into this because he's so freaking passionate about what he can do to help people, and that's who he's helping, these people. So I think that's a perfect answer. Like, get buy-in from those that want to buy in. And if, you know, I taught a course this past weekend, and it's a harsh thing to say for some people to hear, is, you know, you can't care more than your patients. Right. And when you're a new grad and you hear that, you're like, oh my God, how could you say that? But as you keep treating, you start to realize that, and you cannot care more than your patients. And if they're both on, if you're on board and they're on board, amazing things can happen. But if you have that person that's like, no, I need surgery. I only want surgery. I don't want to do anything else. Like, okay, then that's where they're at. And from the biopsychosocial model, that's what they need in order to get better too. Like, if we don't align with that, they're not going to get better regardless. So
yeah, and that is, and those patients, you know, or even the ones I have who come and they say, no, you know, I just need testosterone shots for this low T. Like, I've tried the diet, I've tried the sleep, it doesn't work. My testosterone is still 250. You know, as long as it's not going to cause them harm, those patients, I say, okay, let's do testosterone, because they're also going to get an added placebo effect because they believe that the testosterone shots are going to work. And so they're more than likely going to work. And so you got to meet the patient with where they're at. But I think it is difficult to get started as a patient with me. And what I mean by that is my pre-new patient paperwork probably takes I'd say an hour to an hour and a half for someone to fill out. And that it one that helps me a lot because I get a lot of information on the patient before I see them. And so I get to glean into little nuances in their digestion or little nuances in their sensitivity to chemicals and things like that. That is just, I don't have the time to ask all of those questions, even though I talk for two, or I don't talk, but even though we converse for 2.5 hours for that first appointment. But that's part of my, I have people say they want to become a patient and they just never fill out that paperwork. And I'm okay with that because if they weren't willing to spend 2.5 hours, not 2.5 hours, an hour to an hour filling out that new patient paperwork, the likelihood that they're going to now give up beer, they're going to go exercise 3 times a week and, you know, do a few other lifestyle things is probably pretty low.
Exactly. I love it. You have that initial barrier and that's a good thing. Question, do people, because I don't know what's on your intake, are people equipped to be able to answer it? Or are there a lot of times where they're like, oh, I don't even know?
There's a few times that patients won't know an answer to something and it's more just that they don't, it's might not be something that they pay attention in their life. Sometimes if it's like family medical history, if they've never asked their parents, like, hey, did grandma and grandpa have heart attacks? Like, how did they die? Like, sometimes there's that kind of stuff and they have to do their own digging, which is, I mean, it's super helpful mm-hmm. for me, but also it's helpful for them because they understand, you know, especially if they've, because I've had a few patients who are like, you know, I didn't realize how prevalent heart disease was in my family until I filled this out. And they're like, yeah, so you're 45 now, you have hypertension. Mm-hmm. You know, we have these biomarkers that are showing you're at an increased risk for a cardiovascular event. Here are options on what we could do, and let's talk about them. And that helps some patients make the leap to say, okay, I'm finally ready to change my diet because every male in my family before me died at 55 yeah. and I'm 50.
Quite the motivator.
But most of the time, the majority of the questions are all symptom-based questions. So they're pretty equipped to answer them.
Gotcha. You had mentioned before, and I'm going to ask you to like do your best to dumb it down, I guess. You'd asked before that you're able to, you know, assess how well their GI system is functioning and their nerves and such, their nervous system. Rough overview. How are you doing that?
With the first intake that they're completing, it's all going to be based on their symptoms. And so some examples of the GI questions and all of the questions are going to be rated on a scale of 0, 1, 2, or 3. So 0 being it never happens, 3 being it happens either. It can either be it happens severely, frequently, or it happens on a daily basis. So some of the GI questions would be like that you have gas and bloating after a meal, or you have stomach pain after a meal, you get fatigued after meals, you get shakes if you don't eat every few hours, you have foul-smelling stool, your stool floats, you have food in your stool. I talk a lot about poop with my patients because it tells us so much about the GI system. By the way, the Bristol stool chart, everyone out there, you should go look at the Bristol stool chart, start looking at your poop because you need to start being aware with what's going on in your body. And if you're not kind of in the middle of the pack around a 4 on the Bristol stool chart, then you need to maybe up your fiber, drink some more water, do all that good stuff. So that's on the GI side of thing. The nervous system side, it tends to be like, things like being easily startled, how long does it take you to come down after an emotional fight with a loved one, the hypoglycemic symptoms, so kind of the shaking in between meals, that kind of stuff. And then I've got a whole section on like different neurotransmitters as well that can kind of glean into, you know, are they dopamine deficient? Are they acetylcholine deficient? Because each of those is going to present with some different types of symptoms, especially on the cognitive side of things. That again, just rounds it back into, you know, how can we optimize? And I usually use a lot of this stuff not to push supplements because that's not the way I practice medicine, but more so like on the nutrition and lifestyle side of things, which is the bulk of what most patients get in their first visit.
I love it. Just do less, not add more. That's
exactly
so huge and takes time for people to realize, myself included, you know, it's all of us. Like, what can I add to make myself stronger, faster, better, not have this thing, instead of realizing that it's like the stuff that I'm doing, I need to do less of that thing and eat less of that thing, and I probably would be okay. This is,
yeah, but don't ever give up your whiskey.
No, come on. Are you crazy? True. That's not science.
We have lines. We have standards.
Exactly. Come on now. So in terms of testing, because you kind of threw it out there a little bit, how much are you looking at blood work and values and you know, when does that come into play? I know the answer is typically going to be, it depends on the person, but I feel like some doctors are like only looking at panels, and I feel like that's no better than the, you know, the swinging the pendulum the other way. So
yeah. So the way I approach it, and this was actually taught to me by one of my mentors in med school, is if I don't believe that a lab is, or, and this also applies to imaging, that a lab or imaging is going to change how I treat this patient, then I don't do it.
Yes. One more time.
If the lab or imaging is not going to change how I treat my patient, then I don't do it. If a patient comes in and nothing makes me question that this might be a full thickness retracted tear, which would be a surgical consult,
yeah,
I'm not ordering imaging. Because there's no point. It's just going to tell me what I already think, that there's a tear.
You already know. And I'm gonna ask a step further.
That's when the labs come into play.
On that, even if that you think full thickness retracted tear, you still a proponent of trying conservative measures?
I think it's all going to, for me, depend on what the patient is looking for. If the patient's okay with it and it's like they've got some pain and then they find out they have a full thickness retracted, but it's not really to them worth it to go have surgically fixed, then it's conservative. But if they're like, I love Zumba class and I can't even do Zumba class anymore because of this tear, then I'm like, okay, well then let's get you in with a good orthopedic surgeon who knows what they're doing and is, you know, going to at least not just be like, oh yeah, full thickness retracted surgery, who's actually going to evaluate you to a much greater degree than I will for a surgical consult.
Love it. Makes sense. As a patient-centered model there. Can we keep going down the rabbit hole of more invasive stuff, but maybe we'll take it back a step from surgery. You do injections. You do those fun kind of under things that fall underneath that umbrella.
Yeah.
Could you chat about that? And I'm particularly interested in discussing what we talked about a little bit on social media the other day and things like neurogenic inflammation.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite things to talk about. So for the listener, the realm of injections that I practice are what are called regenerative injection therapies, or RIT, sometimes acronized. But the ultimate goal of all of these treatments is to regenerate degenerative tissue. And so this is why these injections tend to work really well in chronic pain patients, because a lot of the time chronic pain patients have some form of degeneration. And I know we can always go down the rabbit hole, and I'm a big proponent of this, is that just because you have degeneration doesn't mean you have pain. And just because you have pain doesn't mean you have degeneration.
Sure.
And so it's always making sure we are utilizing the appropriate regenerative injection for a particular patient. And so within the scope of regenerative injection therapies, there is the three main ones that are going to be for your typical soft tissue, your connective tissue. So there's prolotherapy, which uses a dextrose solution that creates a small local inflammatory response. It directly stimulates these little cells called fibroblasts, which are the cells that make collagen. And through that process, we get an increase in collagen production, which is now stronger. And so we can help to regenerate damaged ligaments, tendons, and then we can also weakly impact the cartilage cells in osteoarthritic knees and facet joints and things like that. So that's prolotherapy. Then there's platelet-rich plasma, which most people, if you're into the alternative stuff, you've at least heard of this one because it's more popular among the athletes and that kind of stuff. Basically, PRP is we do a blood draw, then we spin it down in a super fast centrifuge, which separates out the plasma layer from the red blood cell layer, and then we extract out a layer that is high in platelets. Now, platelets are the fragments of cells that float through your blood that are the first responders to an injury. When they come across injured tissue, they basically explode and release all these growth factors and cytokines, which then orchestrate the beginning of a clot. They orchestrate the beginning, basically sending signals to the rest of the body to recruit stem cells to the area in order to heal that damaged tissue. And so when we are doing a PRP injection, we are taking those concentrated platelets, we are injecting them into an area that has degeneration that the body might have forgotten about. And because they are coming into contact with degenerative tissue, damaged tissue, they release all of their growth factors and cytokines, which then stimulates the local stem cells in the area, brings new growth factors and new cytokines and stem cells into the area to help heal. So similar concept to prolotherapy, just much stronger. And then the last is the stem cell therapies. Go deep on debunking the whole scam system out there with these umbilical cord stem cells and all that stuff, but we'll table that for now and come back. The bone marrow and adipose stem cell therapies that come from yourself can also be used in regeneration. There's processing steps for that, but those are live mesenchymal and hematopoietic stem cell injections into damaged areas that are going to help regenerate the damaged tissues. And if those damaged tissues are a pain generator, then pain improves.
All the things. And two questions. One, are you doing these with like ultrasound guided? And two, does insurance cover these things? I'm sure the patients ask. Does my insurance cover this?
Yeah, no insurance. There are some select high-end insurance it's basically gonna be like your private insurance through, like I've heard like FedEx will cover a PRP.
Oh.
And it's like weird Southwest might, I've heard through the grapevine. I've never had any of these patients come in or anything like that. So I've heard that there are these high-end plans through these big massive corporations that will cover certain things, but typically, no, these are cash-based procedures because the insurance loves steroid injections, which, again, as I was kind of saying earlier with allopathic medicine, there's a time and a place for steroid injections. And I've had them on myself, and they have been the greatest things that ever happened to me because of the certain situation that I was in. I've performed them on patients because there are certain indications where that is the best thing the patient needs. Yes, there are side effects. And so we get into issues with the side effects, mainly for those who don't know, the steroid injections actually cause more degeneration. And so literally no sense to me that doctors are injecting steroids into joints that are degenerated, because the science is so freaking clear that it degenerates joints even more. So insurance does not cover moral of that story. And then in terms of guidance, yes, I was trained in both fluoroscopic guidance, which is a live x-ray, as well as ultrasound. And so I will use either of those. Lately, I've been using more ultrasound than fluoroscopy just because of radiation exposure, but both are viable means to perform guidance. And that's what I'm using for I'd probably say 80% of my procedures. There's some procedures where, if we're injecting the pezanserine, you don't need imaging to palpate where the pezanserine is. It's like a quarter of an inch from the skin, and you just inject along it. So there's certain things that we don't. But when someone has a partial thickness tear in their hamstring tendon or in the supraspinatus tendon, then yeah, I'm using ultrasound because I want to see the tear. And I want to inject into that tear to actually try to help as best as possible regenerate that tear.
I love it. All the science. And then, Drew, talk to me about, let's say, trigger points and neurogenic inflammation and what you can potentially do from your end.
Yeah,
definitely I can't do from my end.
So within my model of how I treat pain, one of the big things that I look for is chronic neurogenic inflammation. And so this is an area of conventional medicine that they've just kind of forgotten. But we have these peripheral nerves that they come off the nerve roots, they form nerve trunks, and they go out to the skin and they end as free nerve endings. That is literally the reason you can feel something when you touch it. Obviously, we have pressure receptors, so those are going to be slightly different, but we have nerves that end as free nerve endings. Now, those nerves express an ion channel called the TRPV1 ion channel, which most people in medicine, at least, have heard of that, because that's the ion channel that when you eat something spicy, that releases substance P, which results in the brain perceiving pain. It's a danger signal to the brain, and the brain perceives that substance P as pain. When we have chronic neurogenic inflammation, basically where the peripheral nerves are chronically inflamed, they are chronically releasing substance P and a few other neuropeptides. One of them is CGRP, neurokinin A, which we'll disregard those for now, but basically we have this continual dumping of substance P into an area of the body that is then going to cause what is known as hyperalgesia or allodynia. So hyperalgesia is when, actually it's easier to define allodynia first. So allodynia is if you take something, a stimulus to the body, so let's say a stimulus to the skin that in a normal person does not cause pain, a person with allodynia, it causes pain. So these are things like patients who, and these are going to be more severe nerve injuries, like with CRPS and so complex regional pain syndrome. But if you take a cotton ball and you lightly rub a cotton ball on their skin, it feels like burning. So that's allodynia. Hyperalgesia is where a stimulus that is normally painful has a hyper exaggerated response. And so for all you PT people out there, these are the patients that if you're palpating them, you might palpate, let's say that we'll use Pez anserine because it's easy to think of. You palpate their left Pez anserine. And when you palpate it, because it's a superficial structure and the amount of pressure you apply, they have some mild pain. It's like a 2 out of 10. But when you use that same amount of pressure on their affected knee in the same area, and if they feel a 6 out of 10, that's hyperalgesia. And that is mediated through the nerves. That is, and it baffles me that providers, especially the MDs, don't recognize that the only way your brain perceives that is the nerves. Because the perception of pain is the central nervous system. And the only way you get to the central nervous system is through the peripheral nervous system. It doesn't travel through the extracellular matrix. It doesn't travel through the ether.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's it going through, guys?
Right, yeah. And so in that situation, I would then look at, okay, well, what nerve supplies that area? And in relation to the into the Pez anserine area, that's actually the cutaneous branches off of the saphenous nerve. And so I evaluate, how's the rest of your saphenous nerve? And if I can palpate, because you can palpate some of these more peripheral nerves, if I can palpate the saphenous nerve on the right side, the affected side, and I feel that nerve, and then I compare that to the feeling in the exact same spot on the contralateral unaffected leg, and if the one on the affected leg is more painful distal to where the patient's feeling pain, and it's larger, which means it's inflamed, because when nerves are inflamed, they get bigger, then that to me tells me that maybe there's not actually a true Pez anserine bursitis going on. Maybe there might be degeneration, but it could be secondary. But usually what I think of is, hey, there's chronic neurogenic inflammation that's going on here that has never been addressed. And so that's where the perineural injection therapies come into play. And so those are subcutaneous injections of 5% dextrose. And that solution has been chosen because the basic science literature at this point supports that the 5% dextrose has a modulatory effect through a few steps. But basically, at the end of the day, what happens is the 5% dextrose causes the TRPV1 ion channel to calm down and stop releasing substance P. So you are effectively helping to reduce the danger signal to the brain. And so the brain stops perceiving danger and pain, and symptoms improve. Now, sometimes it's not like a steroid injection where it's like one shot and like it's gone, although we wish steroids worked like that. So usually it does take repetitive treatments. And I have theories on why. It just has to do with deeper seated neurogenic inflammation, because neurogenic inflammation can actually travel, which is supported in literature. But that's how, and so that's how I approach neurogenic inflammation. And I am a firm believer. Mm-hmm. And I don't like putting a percent on it, because this is just an opinion, and I know opinions are biased, but I would argue that a large percentage of patients with chronic pain have a neurogenic pain component that has never been addressed. And that is in part why the opiates they're taking, the NSAIDs that they're taking, all the other stuff that they're doing is not benefiting them. Even some of the regenerative injections. If you get stem cells injected into your knee, but your pain was coming from an inflamed nerve that's outside of your knee, you might get a small benefit, because, again, stem cells are super powerful and they're getting a trickling effect into the tissues around it. But at the end of the day, you're not addressing why this patient's in pain, and it's more than likely not going to work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that you threw in there at the end these patients with chronic pain, and that they absolutely have some sort of neurogenic component, or very likely have some sort of neurogenic component that's just being ignored, being not believed. And then we see on social media, the pendulum swings like just way too far the other way of like we've made this dichotomy out of the biopsychosocial model. Like it's two separate things, instead of realizing it's just a thing, an entire all encompassing thing. And so then, you know, if we do have to have a pendulum to it, it goes like to this purely psychosocial side where, you know, it's because they have these thoughts and beliefs, and it's like that is a huge fucking part of it. Absolutely. Treating, and then Drew said how he addresses this, and you know, how is your marriage, what's going on home? Absolutely. But we have to start understanding that, and I love how you phrase that, you know, where are these signals coming from? If we're talking about any kind of central sensitization or anything like that, like this information is going to start at the periphery, and that peripheral nervous system. So we have to be taking a look at it. And with the swing that's finally happening, one of the reasons I love working for Rocktape, with the swing, you know, happening in terms of realizing that we are neurological beasts, like the nervous system is what is everything, or is so much, and understanding that we need to be assessing that. And I love that you're talking about palpating these things and seeing what does it feel like, because as providers, we can do that. Or even you're just listening to their complaints or listening to what makes them better. I love the post that you do talking about like superior clunial entrapment, which I think is going to finally, you know, we're going to start realizing that so much, or I won't say so much, and people get a butthurt about it, but that a lot of what people complain about with back pain, SI joint pain, hip pain, groin stuff, it can be these cutaneous nerves getting entrapped within tissue, and that we need to be treating them a different way, not just smashing them with kettlebells.
Right. Yeah. And I'm a huge believer in all that self mobility stuff, but I've seen this firsthand, that sometimes that can actually make you worse.
Yeah.
Especially. So one of the really fascinating things about the peripheral nervous system is that in order to get from the spinal cord out to the skin, these nerves have to pass through different tissues, different fascial planes. Sometimes they pass through tendons and ligaments in order to get out to the skin. And so I had a patient, this was probably about 3.5 years ago when I actually first started doing the perineural injections. He had injured his shoulder. He was just sleeping. And he like had a dream or something like that, and like threw his arm up and hit his boyfriend's head with his arm, and he injured his shoulder like while sleeping, and no one could figure out what was going on. You know, he had X-rays, all this kind of stuff, and obviously nothing's wrong on the imaging. And so he comes to me, and one of the key hallmarks of neurogenic inflammation and in this capacity is that it gets worse during exercise. And it goes away once you stop using that muscle group, because in some of those situations, you're actually having a fascial constriction around the nerve. And so when you keep contracting around this nerve, it just keeps pissing this nerve off even more, dumping out more substance P, and it's painful. As soon as you relax the muscle and you stop working out, the pain goes away. And so if anybody, if that resonates with anybody out there, if you're, or also weakness, if you have shoulder pain and shoulder weakness during your activity, during the gym exercises, and it never goes away during the exercises until you leave the gym, that's an indication that you actually have a neurogenic inflammation based pain, and you should look into having that looked at. But this patient was using a lacrosse ball, and he was placing it on this one spot on his, basically on like infraspinatus.
Infraspinatus, yep.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah, where, you know, you, when you do that, it feels like your anterior shoulder is going to explode.
Yep.
And he was doing that, but that's actually the exact location where he had an entrapment in the nerve. And so by laying on a ball, he was pissing the nerve off even more. And I don't think he was worsening it because he wasn't trending in a negative direction.
Yeah.
It just stopped him from getting better.
Yeah, you're not getting better. Exactly. You know, and I love that you said that, like, that your starts were with K-Star, and it's like there's tons of value in doing the self-mobilizations and stuff, but if it's like at some point you're like, well, it's not getting
right, yeah,
better, so,
yeah.
So let's try something else.
Yeah, I to go back to the clunial stuff, I think that the majority of people who, and I'm doing air quotes right now, throw out their back when they're squatting or deadlifting, it's actually a clunial nerve injury.
Yeah, for sure. I would buy it. I would absolutely, absolutely buy it. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, please Google it right now and start educating yourself. You can check out Drew's Instagram. I've actually done some posts on it too. Rock Tape does a bunch of stuff on it. Perry does a bunch of stuff on it. Just start looking at it and start kind of opening your mind to things. And this is actually why, you know, I'm a big fan of modalities, meaning tools when it comes to treatment. I use my hands to assess and things like that, but I do like tools. And one of my favorites very quickly has become cups. And I've been using them for years. I've never really been a big fan of like the glass or plastic cups. They're just a little bit too aggressive for my liking. But silicone cups are great. And I found that just in terms of if there are potential entrapments with things, we can get better gliding or flossing, if you will, mm-hmm. via that. And we have that negative pressure to start off with, that decompression of things, as opposed to like, let's just immediately push harder on things, you know, and compress things. And so it's a nice option for, you know, the less invasive type of stuff, because clearly I can't do injections or anything like that, but just as a starting point. And then if you do see improvement in symptoms but not full resolution, this is the time when we should absolutely be having these relationships with people like Drew, where it's like, all right, well, I've taken this person as far as I can get and they're doing all the right stuff, but I think they need a little bit more. And here we go. We have this amazing partnership.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to put a plug here. If there's any PTs out there right now who what I'm saying resonates with you and you want to connect with me just for referrals, I work with a lot of out-of-state patients, and hit me up. I want to connect with people who get this and who are open to this, and I'll start sending you patients if I have patients out your way. Like, I need to connect with PTs who get this and understand, you know. Again, I refer to PT all the time, and I think PT should, you know, really develop their, I don't want it to come across that way, but all providers should have a good referral base. And so
yes. I'd
love to have anyone who is still listening at this point, over 50 minutes in, still listening, and you like what I'm saying, hit me up and I'd love to connect.
How can they hit you up, Drew? What's the easiest way? You're a busy man.
Instagram DM is probably the best way to get things going. And I keep my email a little more sacred. So if the conversation is rolling good, then we move that over to email, just because I hate getting bombarded with emails. But I'm totally fine if I have a bunch of DMs and I need to reply to them.
Amazing. So you guys at Regenerative Performance, I will put it in the show notes for those of you listening via iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You'll be able to get it from there. Drew did make a good point. We are hitting a time here where I kind of like to cut it, but I have two more questions and then I'll just bring you on for another episode and we can talk more about the social media side of things. Two more questions though. One just slipped out of my head as I was saying that, which is fine. So now we're down to one question. Oh no, I remember the second one. Two more questions. One, there is such thing as a like fake doctor. They're not naturopathic medical doctors. I don't know what the terminology is, but I see this information being put out there on Instagram where people are like, hey, make sure you, I guess maybe it's like an ND as opposed to an NMD. I'm not 100% sure. What can people look out for with that?
Yeah. I'm actually really glad you brought that up. So to frame this, so naturopathic medicine is not licensed in all states in the way that osteopathic and allopathic medicine are. And so there are some states where, and there is no regulatory body looking out and saying who can and cannot call themselves a naturopath, a naturopathic doctor, naturopathic physician, whatever the variation is. All right. So the website is www.naturopathic.org. On there, you can go to, and I'm pulling it up right here, but there is under about naturopathic medicine, you can go to regulated states and regulatory authorities. On there, it is going to list out all of the states that have licensure for naturopathic medicine. And so if you are in a state that is not, then there's just certain criteria you need to talk to people about. Not saying that, because there are plenty of people who graduate from an accredited naturopathic medical school and go to an unlicensed state and still help people. And so just because you're in a state like Iowa, I was not on this list, just because you're in Iowa doesn't mean that everybody is a fake. You just have to do your due diligence. And so you need to talk to them and ask them where they went to school, where they got their naturopathic medical degree. On this website here, there also lists the different naturopathic medical schools that are accredited. There's only seven with like two satellites, but there's only seven in North America. If they did not go to one of these schools, then they could have just taken a weekend course and called themselves a naturopath, and that is dangerous. And actually, this is something, and I'm really glad you brought this up because I think I'm going to do a longer video on this, but it's something I'm afraid about because people come across my Instagram. They see, oh, this is what a naturopathic doctor does. Cool. This guy down the street in Iowa is a naturopath. They must be the same thing. And I'm afraid that, you know, and so I need to do a better job of educating and you know, talking about that. But if you guys just go to naturopathic.org, look up the regulated states, look up what schools they are, educate yourself on that so that when you're vetting a naturopathic doctor locally, if they are not in a regulated state, that you are able to talk to them and figure out where they went to med school so that you can validate them, ask to see their medical degree because they should have it posted. But those are some of the things that people need to be looking for their safety.
Yes. That is what I was hoping for because I see, you know, things going around and I'm like, well, how do you know what the heck was you looking for? So
right.
He just gave you all the information. I will link that in the show notes, www.naturopathic.org.
You got it.
And then go and check seven schools. He said it's not that many to have to choose from there. So one of those seven they should have gone to. And just to, you know, yeah, you got to do your due diligence, right? This is your health and it's right. An investment, not an expense. So put in the work. So I'm going to actually cut it there on that question because that answer was really fucking good. And again, I think it brings it very nicely brings it full circle. Just stating your passion and showing your passion. And this is what we want from providers. Doesn't matter what your background is or what your, you know, your license is, what your title is. This is who you want to be seeing, whether you're seeing a physical therapist, a personal trainer, a naturopathic medical doctor, whatever. You want to make sure that this person has this passion because then they're going to help you. They're going to, if they don't know whatever is going on, specifically, they're going to help you figure it out. They're going to go and do their research. They're going to go and ask other people. And that's the person that you want in your corner and you know, on your team. And I've seen that in Drew from the beginning. He's been on Instagram from the beginning. We have grown up together with Instagram. So it was, like you said, only time that he came on. But Drew, would you like to leave the listeners, and they're still listening, they do listen, I look at the stats. Would you like to leave the listeners with any final words?
If you guys hate your day job, go find something else. Find your passions. I'm a huge believer in that. one of the biggest stressors in life is not living your passion, and that has huge ramifications on your health. And so I know that is easier said than done in terms of leaving what you're doing. But I mean, even if you're a PT, I mean, I'm going to guess that most PTs listening to this at this point are living their passion. But if you're not, go find your passion and go do that.
Yes. Yes. He brings it full circle and then he drops the mic. Amazing. I love it. You guys listening, definitely go check him out, especially on Instagram. He does a ton of videos, and then are you putting them on Instagram TV, or are you switching them over to YouTube, the longer content ones you did that you were doing before?
I'm doing all of them. So all my longer form videos are going up on Facebook, IGTV, and YouTube.
How are you formatting them so that they fit both on YouTube, or are you just having the black lines on the side for YouTube? Because stupid Instagram wants that portrait mode.
Yeah, so actually I do this really cool thing where I have a picture. Well, it's kind of like a picture video for IGTV, where it literally instructs people to rotate their phone so that they watch it in landscape.
And it changes the picture for you. I didn't think I realized. I thought IGTV was locked into... I don't do as much on
that. It is locked in, but as long as you have your screen lock on where it doesn't rotate it when you rotate it.
Gotcha.
You rotate it and you can watch in landscape. It's beautiful.
Gotcha. I totally get what you're saying now. So if I was to watch it in portrait, you would be sideways.
Yeah.
Got it. But you turn the phone and now you're beautiful and 1080p. It's amazing. Got it. Understood. Love it. This man's brilliant. Look at this, guys. He's brilliant. Love it. I had to sneak in a little bit of technology in Instagram. I couldn't help myself. So thank you, Drew. I know you're like getting married and juggling a million patients doing a million things. Thank you. We'll definitely bring you back on. We'll have a longer conversation because I'd love to share with them kind of what your model looks like and just the social media aspect of things and just, you know, bridging the gap some more. But thank you for taking so much time today to nerd out and share your brain.
I appreciate it. And I had a really good time.
Awesome. Awesome. And you guys out there listening, thank you. I know you could have been doing anything and you chose to listen to us and get a whole lot of knowledge dropped on you. And for that, we are endlessly, endlessly, one more time, endlessly grateful. I got one more ask for you. I haven't done it in a while. So one more ask for you. If you like it, leave me some stars. If you loved it, subscribe. It does help people to find the podcast. It shows the powers that be that, hey, this thing is worth listening to. All right, cutting it off for real here. Thank you guys again for tuning in. Until next time, friends, Maestro out.